Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Bill O'Brien on the conference call last Friday for season ticket holders made reference a couple times to, almost in response to, the quote unquote noise that he is hearing from presumably from fans and outside the building. Tried to remind people multiple times that it's not March that they're trying to win. It's January.
We're not trying to win March. We're trying to win in January. We're incomplete right now. We're not where we want to be, but it's April. It's not November. We're trying to set our team up depth-wise, talent-wise, everything that we do to be able to win in January.
Seth, that couching of it there, to me, indicates that Bill O'Brien has other big moves in the back of his mind.
Well, see, I don't read it that way. I read it as his misinterpretation of something that people often say, which is, look, winning free agency isn't the same as winning in January, where a lot of times teams will go out and they'll sign a bunch of players. And more times than not, the teams that are really aggressive in free agency, when they win in March, it doesn't pay dividends. Think of the Philadelphia Dream Team, the Eagles Dream Team, or various other times. Yep. Sometimes it works out, but more times than not, it doesn't. I think he's using that theory to inappropriately apply it to what is widely regarded as one of the worst trades ever made. So like, that's different. There's a difference between winning March versus getting slaughtered in March. Getting slaughtered in March is never a good thing. Getting slaughtered in March actually has a direct correlation to whether or not you can win in January. So that part of it really didn't do it for me. I think that's great. Don't think that winning March is going to win you a Super Bowl, but try to avoid getting slaughtered as much as possible in life. Kids, that's a life lesson, not just in football, in life. Getting slaughtered any time of the year tends to be a bad thing.
Yeah, that quote, too, is a big ask of the fans. That to me, it can be interpreted one of two ways. It's either we've got other things planned to make the team better, which they do. I mean, there's a draft, and they're going to make more signings. I don't know if they have anything big planned to make the team better. I don't know that they have the ammunition to go make a big trade anymore, Seth, with their players that would be involved in a big trade now traded in Hopkins and Clowney last year, because they're not trading Tunsil or Watson. And with no first-round picks for the next 2 years, they don't have that sort of ammo. Or it can be interpreted as just an ask of the fan base to, hey, trust me. You know, I know that you guys don't like what's going on right now, but we're trying to win in January and we're going to put this thing together. It's a big ask for a head coach, Seth, who's had very little success in January, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. Like, as far as the draft, too, I think do we trust him in the draft? And the draft is such a crapshoot in terms of judging the draft. When is it a good draft? You know, you need 3 years to figure out whether a draft was a good draft or not. And can you, with 2 second-round picks, really do much that you're going to see immediately? You might strike gold with one of those second-round picks. Who knows? You might strike gold with both of them. It's just, it's less likely that you will, and certainly you won't replace a player like DeAndre Hopkins unless you really, really strike gold.
You and I got to talking about this yesterday after the show, because it is an interesting quote. We're trying to win January. We're not trying to win in March. Is when was the last time the Texans had a we won in March kind of feel to their offseason? We know what Bill O'Brien's referring to. You, I think you positioned it really well, Seth. Like, these teams that make these big deals in March where everybody's going, wow, this team made aggressive moves and now all of a sudden they're, you know, they're here instead of down here. I know it's radio, but I'm using my hands to illustrate. You know, they're much higher than they were before. I don't think last March was a March they felt like they won necessarily little. The last two Marches, really, I mean, that you could argue, other than the Tyrann Mathieu one-year deal that they got in 2018, I think you could argue that Brian Gain, one of the big criticisms was he wasn't aggressive enough in March because they had all that cap space there. So 2019, 2018, I would say no. 2017, Tony Romo decided to retire in March. That was going to be the Texans' big move because they had just traded away Osweiler. The last time this team had a we won in March kind of feel was in 2016, which wound up being one of the most disastrous Marches of all time for this team. And I do wonder if Bill O'Brien still has some form of football PTSD from 2016. You know, where they, that was the last time we came out of, you know, that was the last time on April 1st, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ahead of the draft, we felt like, boy, we got a starting quarterback. We got a starting running back. We made some reinforcements along the offensive line. Whew, man, we are restructured and ready to go on the offensive side of the football. I don't know. Maybe I'm exaggerating exactly how we felt back then, but the Texans, I think, were getting decent grades for their March back in 2016.
Well, if you think about the entire offseason of 2016, too, after free agency, you'd lost Brandon Brooks and Ben Jones, okay? And those were big losses, just in that Brandon Brooks, it wasn't going to work out because Brandon Brooks hated Bill O'Brien. Yet another, you know, interpersonal issue that Brandon Brooks seems to have with Bill O'Brien that you see peppered throughout Bill O'Brien's history. But you replaced the center with Nick Martin. They draft Nick Martin in the second round. I think it took several years for it to work out there, and it's not like I was so in love with Ben Jones as a player, but at least that right there might have been the best move they made. They drafted Will Fuller in the first round, and if Will Fuller could just, damn it, stay healthy, that was a brilliant draft pick. Bill Barnwell actually criticizes the Will Fuller draft pick here, but for the wrong reasons. Bill Barnwell says that Will Fuller wasn't worth a first-round pick, but he doesn't cite injury concerns because Will Fuller was healthy in college. If Will Fuller had just been able to stay healthy all these years, I think he's certainly proven that he would have been worth that first-round pick.
Yeah. So the big moves that they made, and I'm looking at Barnwell's report card on it as well. Barnwell gave the Texans a B for their offseason back in 2016, of which now he takes the whole offseason.
Yeah.
It does. But he categorizes the signing of Brock Osweiler as what went right. He does what went right and what went wrong. And he said they made an aggressive move for a quarterback. We don't know if the Osweiler signing will work for the Texans. He's thrown all of 305 passes over the last 4 years. His run last year in place of Manning suggests that Osweiler could be a league average quarterback. And with the Texans signing him to what amounts to a 2-year, $37 million deal to start, he's being paid like a league average quarterback. If you're a Texan fan, you have to be worried that the Broncos saw what Osweiler could do and twice passed on him. I would say they didn't totally pass on. I mean, the Broncos made a competitive offer. It's just the Texans made the highest offer, and Osweiler went with that money. They did go back to Peyton Manning in the postseason that year, but I don't think even that version of Peyton, I don't think you have to apologize if you're the Broncos for going back to Peyton Manning when the playoffs roll around. They won a Super Bowl. I mean, so it was the right move to make. They had a great defense. He goes on and on. I'm not going to read the whole thing with Barnwell when it comes to Osweiler. Talks about Hoyer failing in the playoffs. Talks about the litany of quarterbacks that the Texans brought in. I think the fact of the matter is with the Osweiler signing is that I would say at the low end of people's evaluation, people were skeptical about it. I would say at the high end of it, there were people who were optimistic about it because of how quarterback-starved the Texans had been under Bill O'Brien. So I think nobody was saying that it was going to work out the way it did, where he was going to be gone after 1 year, where he was going to be traded with a second-round pick after just 1 year. So that could be something where Bill O'Brien, as he's sitting here talking about winning in March, not trying to win March, trying to win in January instead. I think the Osweiler free agency signing is absolutely something he has in the back of his mind. A lot of people liked that signing back in the day. And then the other moves to plug holes on offense, Lamar Miller, people like that signing. You can talk about how Lamar Miller worked out in the end, probably slightly overpaid, but he was all right. The offensive line signings to replace Ben Jones and Brandon Brooks. The signing part of it was a disaster. They signed Jeff Allen and Tony Bergstrom. Bergstrom was gone halfway through the season, and Jeff Allen was a bust. So March did not go. Seth, the last time the Texans were presumed to have won March, they got blown out in March.
Well, Jeff Allen, and then later, the interesting thing about that was Jeff Allen and then later Zach Fulton, the guys that you used to replace Brandon Brooks ended up combined making about the same amount of cash as Brandon Brooks over the next several seasons. So that to me is the biggest shame of Bill O'Brien and his culture and whatever it's been, was the fact that he and Brandon Brooks couldn't see it eye to eye. And yet Brandon Brooks goes up and plays for a Super Bowl team and is just seemingly one of the most loved guys on that team. I tend to wonder exactly what the hell's going on with that culture, you know, and maybe Jack Easterby is the answer. Maybe Jack Easterby is the guy that would have kept Brandon Brooks around.
This is really interesting. As you go on and look at Barnwell's thing, he had it reversed almost, Seth, where you go, okay, what went right? Well, they signed Osweiler, they signed Lamar Miller, blah, blah, blah. I think you could argue maybe I'm, and Jeff Allen, maybe I'm lumping Lamar Miller in with this unfairly, but by and large, he's saying free agency went right for them. It didn't. It was a disaster for them in free agency. What went wrong, as you pointed out, the very first thing he has is they drafted Fuller in the first round. Now, I don't know that I would say it's gone right with Will Fuller so far. I think what we've learned is that Fuller was definitely deserving of a first-round pick. Boy, I mean, the pressure's on Will Fuller this year to stay healthy. Will Fuller is going to be asked to be the number one guy.
Well, I mean, in terms of he was worth a first-round pick, is if you go back in time and say, okay, what production would you like to get out of him when he's healthy? I think but it's one of those, the reasoning was right at the time because you couldn't have predicted he was going to be injury-prone like this. But looking back on it, well, I wish they'd spend it on somebody else.
Yeah.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we are back. Appreciate you tuning in here on a Tuesday here, Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610. Just to put a bow on what we were talking about in the previous segment, the bottom line is, as we looked at the last time the Texans won March, if for some reason Bill O'Brien is looking back at the last time they won March and saying it's not quite as important that we win March, I kind of understand that. I just wish he hadn't traded away DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and a second-round pick. That's all.
Yeah, it's almost like, hey, we went bankrupt, but we're not trying to win March. If, if I were to come home today and I were like, hey, honey, look, I got fired from my job today, but don't worry. We're trying to win in December. At the end of the year, I want to show that I had a lot of money. It's all cumulative. Do you think, does Bill O'Brien understand the importance of March?
Right.
The more I talk about it, the more I don't understand. I went from thinking I understood what he meant by, okay, it's not about winning in March, it's about winning in January. That's a completely empty and meaningless statement. What he's talking about is, it's not important to win the approval of others in March. It's important that you produce in January. The problem is, I'm not sure he's aware of the fact that he hasn't produced in January. He pays lip service to it, but I think in trying to deliver this message of like, hey, baby, we're all about winning in January, you just got your doors blown off in January, and you're sitting here telling me that the next time we see you in March, it's okay that you're not winning in March either. It's all about winning next January.
I got an interesting question, Seth, from a person on the season ticket wait list who went back and listened to some of the things that Cal McNair and Bill O'Brien had to say on that conference call. And in particular, talking about what Cal McNair said about the leadership of the team, how the fans should feel. Just to reset for people who haven't heard that, here was Cal McNair on the roundtable on Friday, talking about basically giving his assessment of the Texans offseason so far.
It's important. The focus is the team. And I would think as a fan, I would be really excited that your leadership of the team can make bold moves and go out and do these things to make the team better and take these next steps that we're all looking forward to.
So that was the one Cal McNair quote that got everybody kind of riled up. And Seth, the particular season ticket holder's question was, he's at like 12,000 or something right now. So he's got a ways to go before he works his way back up. I've been on the season ticket wait list for a few years now, more or less as an experiment, just to see how quickly I work my way to the top, you know, for content purposes.
Yeah.
Because I live with a season ticket holder and I cover the team. So going to games is not a big issue. I've been on the list for probably 4 or 5 years. I got the email yesterday that showed me where I was. I'm at like 2,800 on the season ticket wait list. So it's obviously a much longer list than where I am right now. But the question that the season ticket holder had was, what do I do if I get to the top of the wait list that I've been waiting to get to so long and Bill O'Brien is still in place as the head coach and general manager of the football team? And I found that to be a fascinating question, because it's probably going to take that guy a few years to work his way to the top of the season ticket holder list. And it brings up so many wrinkles as to how long Bill O'Brien could be here. Even if Bill O'Brien's successful, are there still people who just don't vibe the right way with Bill O'Brien to where they're going to go, you know what, I'm going to pass? Or obviously, are you such a big Texan fan that you go ahead and you take the leap, knowing that maybe there's change coming? I found it to be a fascinating question. And I at the end of the day, if I were a season ticket holder, I'm not totally sure how I would play that once I got to the top.
My message to that person would be, look, everything is transient in this world. Yeah. And nothing's more transient usually than NFL head football coaches. But yeah. You are in this situation where seemingly it's hard to envision Bill O'Brien getting fired anytime in the next 2 years, because that quote by Cal McNair, to me, what it felt like was, okay, Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby have definitely sold Cal McNair on the notion that whatever they're doing over there is bold, that they are trying this experiment where Jack Easterby, motivational speaker and culture guru, is going to create this culture and this environment that's unlike anything we've ever seen, and that will override and supersede everything. Because how else is Jack Easterby going to sell books one day than if this works out? So I think that's what it is that Cal has been sold on this vision by Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby. And now it's up to Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien to actually make that vision come to fruition. And that's what's got everybody all nervous. I would say, if somebody gets to the top of the season ticket holder list here and worries, if you just spent however many years, how many years have you been on it, Sean?
On the season? I think probably from about the time I got over to 610. So probably at least five years.
Yeah. So if you've been on that list for 5, 6, 7, 8 years by the time you get to the top of it, then I would say rest assured, Bill O'Brien will either sink or swim at some point within the next few years. He's either going to become a much better football team, or there'll be a new coach in there. I think that Cal McNair is being very, very, very patient, but everything has its limit. Just like we thought Rick Smith would never not be the general manager of the Houston Texans, things change over time.
Yeah, I would go so far as to say if I were in a position today where I was actually going to use my spot on the wait list to go ahead and get tickets, I'd probably still go ahead and get the tickets, because I've been on there for so many years that you're right, Seth. You almost have to look at it. You almost have to look at the Bill O'Brien era the way that sometimes existentially we look at ourselves. Like, hey, I realize that all the stuff that I do every day feels really important to me. But in the grand scheme of the world, in the grand scheme of chronology and all of the years that the universe has existed, you and I sitting here firing our little hot takes and dirty jokes back and forth at each other every day, not the most significant thing in the world. You almost have to look at the Bill O'Brien era like that. Like, hey, this team's been around since 2002. O'Brien's going to have been here 7 years now. I hope to stay alive for a long, long time. Existentially, this O'Brien era thing, it'll pass in time. Well, I guess, or like as you said, it'll sink or swim, I guess is a better way to put it.
But that is, I mean, and that's part of the problem that an owner faces, isn't it? Where, you know, that's not what people want to spend money on. You know, it's like, is this a test of my ability to be mindful and in the moment? Like they don't want, people aren't paying money for season tickets to be a test of their understanding of where they fit in the universe, and to not actually care about the fact that Bill O'Brien seems to be out of control and drunk with power. Like, people want to enjoy their football team. And there's just an increasing sense with every passing year that people flat out don't enjoy Bill O'Brien and they don't trust that he's going to deliver. And I think more than anything, they worry that he's squandering Deshaun Watson. And yes, that's where the biggest disconnect is right now. I don't know. At some point, will people start to blame Deshaun Watson more than Bill O'Brien? I very much doubt it. I think that Deshaun Watson will be always, whether, you know, whether it's his fault or not, Bill O'Brien is going to get the brunt of the blame for it not working out if it doesn't work out with Deshaun Watson. And I think a lot of people are thinking there's only so much time before maybe a young quarterback goes beyond the point of no return and you don't get the best out of him. So let's get an Andy Reid type guy in to work with this guy ASAP.
That's where reading the Osweiler stuff, Seth, in the previous segment and in reading it last night and getting ready for the show, that's where it really hits home. Because you made your big move to go get a quarterback, presumably because you feel like the rest of the roster is ready to win. Hey, let's face it, with Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett as their quarterbacks, they made the playoffs the year before that. How else could you feel about your roster other than, man, this is a roster that if we get decent quarterback play, as opposed to disastrous quarterback play, that we're especially in this division where you've got banged up Andrew Luck, Blake Bortles, and at that time, Marcus Mariota heading into his second year as quarterback, man, you got to feel like if we get average quarterback play, if Brock Osweiler had been average back in 2016, the Texans probably win 11 games or 12 games, but he was abjectly terrible. So they go 9-7 instead. That's what hurts to go back and read the Osweiler stuff, because you feel like, man, that was the only thing that needed to be fixed back then. Now you've got a quarterback and are you creating more issues, right? Are you creating more issues around what is a franchise quarterback? Can you imagine if you put Deshaun Watson on the 2016 team instead of Brock Osweiler, how you would feel back when you still had a pretty decent offensive line? You know, you still had Dwayne Brown at left tackle on that team. The offensive line hadn't gone into the horrible, horrible territory that it got to in 2017 and 2018. The defense, you know, you had Clowney, you had Clowney and Merciless. That was the number one defense in the league that year in terms of yardage. So it's a source of frustration when you see that they've never been able to get that roster balance right. When they had no quarterback, the roster was great. Now they've got a quarterback and the general manager can't stop tinkering with it.
Well, and I think that's where, and as you've pointed out, look, the Texans are unlikely to completely, you know, bomb this season or anything. It's not like all of a sudden they're a 3-13 team because they lost DeAndre Hopkins. And there are avenues by which maybe the offense is more well-rounded. If they actually use David Johnson as a receiver, if they actually use Duke Johnson as a receiver, if maybe you get Laviska Shenault or one of these other wide receivers in the second round, then maybe you have a more well-rounded offense than you had last year. You're going to lose DeAndre Hopkins. There's no replacing him. But maybe you have a more well-rounded offense because now you have a genuine slot receiver. The biggest thing, honestly, that I worry about in terms of the Texans being able to be competitive is the defense. And just, you know, how much better can the defense improve just through health alone? Because that's mostly what you've got going for you, is that you've got a couple young players that can get better, but more it's Bradley Roby. Can he stay healthy? J.J. Watt, can he stay healthy? Your defensive backfield in general, can they stay healthy? They need to really, really stay healthy, or a bunch of these young guys need to step up, because otherwise you're in rough shape defensively.
Yeah, and I wonder how many young guys they have on that defense where you go, I hope this young guy can step up. You know, I mean, Garyon Conley is a guy who's heading to the end of his rookie deal. Justin Reed is a great player. So Justin Reed can just be Justin Reed, and I'm fine with that. Seth, they've got a lot of guys on that defense, though, that are a lot of guys, and it feels like they are who they are, right? Are we expecting Whitney Mercilus to make a big jump in who he is as a player at age 30? No. Bernardrick McKinney is who he is. Zach Cunningham's improvement last year is encouraging, and maybe he builds on that and improves some aspects of his game. Brendan Scarlett is who he is. Tashawn Gibson is who he is. I think Bradley Roby, health, yes. If Bradley Roby is what he was last year, but for 16 games, I'm cool with that. The one guy that I go, okay, this guy can help in an area that needs help, and he's a young player who flashed some things, is Omenihu on the defensive line.
Yeah,
so
if
you take Omenihu's year last year and you extrapolate it out for a full season of a regular rotation guy, that's somebody who fills a need for this team and is an encouraging young player. But it's hard to find guys like that.
It's hard to find guys like that. Omenihu showed a lot of promise, and I know just from watching him work and watching his technique, he's a guy that's going to work at it and get better at it. So I'm excited about Omenihu. And then I think also with the addition of Timmy Jernigan, even though I think you have to limit how much Timmy Jernigan plays, they've got the makings of a much more versatile defensive line and at times a better pass rushing group, because you've got guys like Timmy Jernigan's a different body type than DJ Reader was. You know, Charles Omenihu is a different body type than DJ Reader was. You've started to got some of these guys that can both stop the run and rush the passer. And I think that gives Anthony Weaver a lot of options. And that's probably the biggest X factor of them all, is that Anthony Weaver is a defensive coordinator now. Is he a little bit more creative? Is he more aggressive with his blitz packages? Are we going to see a different type of defense than Romeo Crennel? Hopefully we do. Hopefully that's an X factor.
Yeah, because they have not done much this offseason on the defensive side of the ball. That's why I'm not so sure that everybody who's slotting a wide receiver in with the 40th or the 57th pick is on target with this. The only moves they've made defensively, Timmy Jernigan on a one-year bargain deal, Jalen Watkins, one-year bargain deal, and then Eric Murray, who I think most Texan fans wish was a one-year bargain deal, but he's a three-year, $20 million deal. They haven't done much on that side of the ball.
Eric Murray's an interesting one. I'll say this. If Eric Murray works out, I'm going to have to give Bill O'Brien a lot of credit for that one, because he was a different player in Kansas City than he was in Cleveland. In Kansas City, he was more of a safety. In Cleveland, he lined up as a slot corner a lot, so he's very versatile. And the Chiefs, the Browns did trade for Eric Murray in the last year of his contract, because John Dorsey was the GM in Cleveland. He had drafted Murray in Kansas City. He wanted him back. He wanted to bring him to Cleveland. So I think there might be something there. I'm hoping. I've got my fingers crossed that I'm pleasantly surprised by Eric Murray.
All right. Major League Baseball plans to break the sports silence. Will this work? We will discuss next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Jeff Passan of ESPN.com, story overnight talking about Major League Baseball resuming its season. According to sources, MLB and the union focused on a plan that could allow the season to start as early as May in Arizona. Of course, the plan has a number of potential stumbling blocks, but it's emerged above other options as the likeliest to work and has been embraced by both baseball, the owners, and the players' union. And everybody's excited about the possibility of baseball's return. Seth, I'm at a stage right now where the mere thought of things like this resuming gets me excited. You know, like the endorphins of reading a story about, holy crap, we might have baseball back. And I'll admit, I'm not at a stage where at night I'm jonesing hard to, like, oh crap, there's not a baseball game or a basketball game. Don't get me wrong, if there were one on, I would probably watch it. I'm still at the adaptation phase of this thing, where I've got enough stuff to watch on Netflix and I've still got a show to get ready to do with you and stuff like that. There's enough things to occupy me at this point. But the fact of the matter is, especially with baseball, is that I was so looking forward to this season that the sooner we can get the Astros back to being the villain that we want them to be, the better I'll feel. And this story is definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm still skeptical that they can pull this off logistically by May. It seems extreme, because every time we talk about it, this notion of bringing only the most crucial members of a baseball team and all 30 teams being in one spot and playing these games, while also having like the crucial support staff and somehow also keeping everybody else out. I don't quite know how it's going to work out. And I think more than anything, they have to, the keystone for all of this is that they'll have a bunch of tests. You know, that the 5-minute test will be out by then, that baseball somehow will have a bunch of those on lockdown to the point where they're testing everybody extremely frequently. They've been told by the federal health authorities that as long as they're testing frequently, they don't have to quarantine everybody who came into contact with this person. They just need to be test even more aggressively. So it's possible in theory, but this is a massive number of people that you got to plop down in extreme circumstances into a major city, by the way. You know, Phoenix is not a tiny city, and keep them separated from everybody else. And I'm not quite sure how you pull that off.
Yeah. What would you say if we were if we were making a list of the essential people, like the people that absolutely had to be in this metaphorical baseball bubble that they're creating, totally metaphorical, because as you point out, it's easy for strangers to meander in and out and probably get in contact with a player who's going to get takeout. Although my guess is that players are going to, there'll probably be quarantine aspects to this where players won't be allowed to leave the hotel. They'll be taken in scrubbed down, totally cleansed vehicles from the hotel to the ballpark. I think that may be the toughest adjustment for the players is going to be that they're going to be living under some very serious restrictions more than anything else.
It would be a compound, you know? I mean, don't get it wrong. This is going to be like sometimes when an oil company is doing business in a politically volatile nation, they've got a compound with a perimeter and everything, you know, and everybody stays inside and it's a big deal if you leave the compound. I think you'd have to have a major compound at one of these, at a huge hotel or resort area, I'm guessing, and buses would go in, buses would go out. Everything would have to be very carefully monitored. You'd probably have, honestly, I'm not even exaggerating here. I think more than anything, what you're going to be worried about two things. One, guys that feel like they desperately need to get out either to see their families, or they're going stir crazy and they need to go out and perhaps seek companionship of somebody who's not a family member. There's that. And then you have various people that might want to profit off of that loneliness trying to get in. Various people of various professions, some of whom work legally in the next state over. So, like, this is like...
Blackjack dealers?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about. So I wonder, like, how do you actually get... How many baseball players are there? How many, like, I know, and this is with expanded rosters, you know, how do you actually get over 1,000 baseball players plus to actually stay in an area like that for 4.5 months? You got to get them there to agree to that. Then you got to create the actual arena. You know what they have to do here, Sean? This, like a mobilization like this, I don't think you can pull this off without help from the military. And I don't mean that it needs to be a military operation. I think you need generals and people like retired generals who have actually had to put things like this together in extremely fast fashion before to logistically get everything together, because it's potentially a nightmare.
Well, and this goes back to my original question about who is deemed essential in this whole thing. Obviously players, obviously managers, coaching staff, trainers, you know, medical, they probably, each team maybe brings a nutritionist as well, because, you know, who knows how well these guys are going to be eating when they're stuck in hotels. So I would imagine that'll be deemed essential. There will need to be a media relations person, at least one that goes with each team that'll probably be, I'm guessing the fewer people that they can have there, the more that people can, they look at people and go, okay, well, they kind of duplicate effort. So we can probably get by with this one guy doing this or gal doing this job. But I think media, I think broadcasters are going to be, broadcasters will be an interesting one, because that is one that I think can probably be done remotely. It won't be as good of a product or feel as authentic, but you're going to lose some things in the wash, and one of them may be the authenticity of the broadcast. That's just the way it's going to be. But you touch on a really interesting thing, Seth, is that part of what might be deemed essential and where they may actually need to beef up is in team security. Both security and keeping people out of the compound, and security, I would say, in the individual hotels in terms of making sure that players aren't, you know, players aren't violating whatever the rules are.
You know what, though? The more that I think about this, I'm coming up with solutions. This is how I'm going to become not just the Harris County Corona Commissioner, but maybe commissioner of the entire sports world. I think that it's as simple as conjugal visit trailers. That's all you have to have. You have your conjugal area where, especially if you got a 5-minute test, your wife comes in, maybe your family too, but you know, more than anything, you need to see your wife at least once a week.
Yeah.
And she gets tested. You come in and you have an afternoon together. Or perhaps too, you know, if it's in a resort area and you've got enough rooms, people can have their family there. It's just that when they enter or leave, it's going to be, okay, you get tested, you're here for a few days, your family wants to go back home, they're going to get tested, they're going to leave for a few days. It all boils down to testing. So it's possible. It's just, you're going to have to be administering thousands of tests per week and being very, very vigilant about everything.
I feel like I can ask this question, and I don't feel like it's rhetoric because you are the commissioner of the coronavirus in Harris County. Yeah. Do we have any clue as to what the cost of testing is? I feel like we just throw this out there like, well, they'll be testing, and oh, they'll be testing. And then when the tests get here, oh, the 5-minute test and blah, blah, blah. Do we know what these tests cost? I mean, are we talking hundreds of thousands of dollars in testing? Are we talking millions, tens of millions? Do we have any idea what the neighborhood is for the cost of doing regular testing for hundreds of people every day so that we can have baseball?
No, I don't have a clue. Not a clue on this earth.
Well, you better learn, Commissioner.
This is how would I answer that in a? This is what I'd say. Data.
You're like the governor. You're like the governor of Georgia.
We're. Hey, did you? I just realized. Did you guys know this thing is a virus? Here's your Harris County Corona Commission. Did you guys realize there's a difference between a virus and bacteria? Mind blown.
All right, so testing. Seth, what were you were about to say something about testing?
Oh, I was just going to say it's this 5-minute test, which isn't officially out yet. So, like, nobody's paying for these things yet. I'm guessing they're going to charge a pretty penny for it, and justifiably yeah. so. Let's see. There are about 18,000 of these little toaster-sized machines across the country that will be able to run this test by Abbott. Abbott will initially supply 50,000 tests a day with the goal to ramp up test supply to over 1 million a month. So, obviously, this is where it gets dicey, too. Testing is critical with this. It is a bad look if baseball is able to administer hundreds of these tests per day while medical facilities around the country are still struggling to obtain the test. This is why yeah. I'm skeptical that they're going to be able to pull this off by May. As long as there's a single hospital out there that's saying, we need to test more people, we don't have these tests, it is including municipalities, because if we want everybody, 300 million people to start to return to work, it's probably going to involve pretty aggressive testing if we're able to do it and kind of balance that risk-benefit ratio. So at what point is it okay for baseball and basketball and these other sports leagues to have way more tests than everybody else? I don't know. That's going to be a dicey one.
I would like for the test to be something that the players have to pee on, and it shows a pink positive or negative sign, like a pregnancy test. That's what I would like. Yeah. And then they show them on social media, like Alex Bregman on there with his coronavirus pregnancy test, pointing at his negative sign.
Well, this is right up your alley, Sean. This is where you could make this a television event, even if it's not a pee stick. However you end up doing it, this is going to be very big for both fantasy and gambling. So yes. When you get the daily, let's say hypothetically they test everybody every morning. Like, you're going to be waiting for the corona report, right? You're going to be waiting yeah. for when the COVID results come out, because, oh, it turns out, you know what? Bregman's down for the next 14 days because he's got the COVID.
Yeah. Boy, I really need to cozy up to somebody on the Astros training staff between now and May.
How about
just so they can so I can get the inside information. Can you text me? If anybody comes up positive, can you just text me before you let the world know so I can get down on the game today?
You're going to go diabolical. You're going to go like the Russian Olympic Village. We're going to see an image of you wearing a mask and a lab coat somehow.
Like, hell yeah.
Carrying the test results in. You'll have your own little test so you can test guys before the public knows.
Hell yeah. All right. So that's so baseball targeting May. They would be using electronic strike zones would be part of it. They would have players mic'd up. That's been proposed as part of the enhancing the what is probably going to be a somewhat stale broadcast as well. So.
Yeah. You know, the player that would seemingly be at the most risk in all of this would be the catchers, because the umpires, through use of an electronic strike zone, the umpires will actually be at a safe distance behind the catcher. But I don't see any way around the catcher having 9, 10, 11 batters up in front of him in close proximity multiple times yeah. per game, every game. There's no way to get rid of the catcher. So I wonder if do you have to have the catcher wear like one of those full medical masks, you know, like with the full shield and everything? You might have to have like the personal protective equipment on a medical level for the catcher. He's getting
breathed on by everybody.
Or at
least just a mask. At least just one of those, maybe those N95 masks underneath the catcher's mask.
Oh, boy.
Can you imagine having one of those on in 115 degree heat in Phoenix in June?
In Arizona. Oh, man. But Sean, not just June, July and August. I mean,
yeah,
this would be the entire season. August in Phoenix. And as we did the math earlier, it's impossible to have every single game at Chase Field. I would imagine because it's Arizona, there have to be multiple indoor baseball fields out there, like amongst colleges and whatnot. I bet there's a few facilities out there you can use.
You know what another interesting wrinkle to this thing is, Seth? If they have to, this just made me think of this when we were talking about them having to play games in the heat in the summertime, is that if they're already going to need bigger rosters to accommodate this in case people are positive for COVID-19. But there could be a wear and tear aspect to this, especially if they're playing double headers, things like that, that the teams that have the deepest minor league systems make it an incremental advantage in this thing. And this is where, man, this is where if this pandemic had hit in 2017, back when the Astros were loaded in their minor league system, I mean, they already won the World Series that year. Hell, they might, they might have destroyed everybody in the regular season back when they had some guys on the farm. They've traded them all away since then for Verlander and Cole and Greinke. But that's a little incremental advantage that a team, you know, a team like Tampa Bay that made the playoffs last year, they're a budget-conscious team who's probably going to be even more budget-conscious after this pandemic does whatever it does to their books that it's doing to everybody else's. But they've got the best minor league system in baseball. You know, now all of a sudden, from players, let's say that they just let's say they let teams use their entire 40-man roster for the season. Theoretically, the Rays and you have all these double headers, and you're going to have games probably fewer off days and things like that. Now all of a sudden, the teams that actually have pretty good players from 26 through 40 better than other teams' players, 26 through 40. I'm not saying the Rays are going to win the equivalent of 105 games now in the season, but it could be the difference between making the postseason and not making the postseason. That is an advantage for those teams with a deeper minor league system. And I bring it up because the Astros do not have a deep minor league system right now at all.
They don't have a deep minor league system. Some of your better pitching prospects like Forrest Whitley are just huge wild cards. We don't know what the hell Kyle Tucker or Forrest Whitley are in terms of whether they're mature enough, whether they've got the right, you know, the right attitude and preparation and all that. But I think the area of advantage I would say is that just like Charlie Morton with the Rays, I think Justin Verlander could benefit from having a couple extra weeks to a full month and a half or so of rest, because those teams that either made deep playoff pushes or went to the World Series, that's an extra chunk of work and a whole big bunch of rest that they don't get before they have to ramp back up when the season begins. I think that Verlander and guys like that probably get a big advantage from getting pushed back. Not to mention, obviously, that Verlander had his surgery. So even if he hadn't had surgery and didn't need to recover, his actual arm, as opposed to his groin, that needs some rest too.
Text message, Seth, you lost your damn mind. You're going to tell your wife, let's go to the conjugal visit area. You think that sounds attractive? That grossed me out. Good luck pulling that off. I will say this, dude, in support of this texter, I'm going to need, you know, they're deep cleaning everything for the coronavirus right now. I am going to need the deep, deep, deep cleaning if I'm going to be using a conjugal visit area that my baseball teammates are going to be using.
No, I would, it would be, listen, texter. Assuming that's a guy that's texting, your lady might surprise you with every look. Like women, the women like to feel a little dangerous at times. They want to feel a little bit like, oh, this isn't classy. This is kind of trashy. Yeah, let her indulge her trashy side a little bit. In a conjugal prison trial, this is your prison fantasy without actually having to go to prison. In fact, you're going to get paid millions of dollars to be in this prison fantasy. That's not bad. It's not bad.
I might actually, you know what
I would do? I would actually pay like the quote unquote guards a little extra. I would actually, I'd be like, listen, Major League Baseball employee, I want you to dress up in this prison guard outfit and be really rude to my wife as she's coming in. Let's really do this thing up. Yeah.
Yeah. The good news is, babe, you're not going to get COVID-19. The bad news is you might get gonorrhea. It's a trade-off. Everything's a trade-off. We're getting texts. The price for a coronavirus test via the CDC is $36. That's pricey to be doing every day with a bunch of. Now that may be the current test.
Anything. That doesn't seem like much at all. That's
no. Well, I'm just but I'm talking about Seth. I'm talking about doing it for 1,000 people every day.
Yeah, so it's $36,000 a day. That's Major League Baseball we're talking about here. This is they'll make at least a few billion dollars if they're able to go through with all this. I don't. So they might break even on the year. I don't know because the gate receipts are huge the gate revenue is bigger in baseball than it is in the other sports. I mean, you got 81 home games, you know, so that right. they're taking a big hit there. Then the money varies from market to market with the TV deals. You know, the Yankees have an incredible TV deal where some cities are still struggling to have any TV deal at all. And I wonder how much all that's going to be affected, you know, more so than the NFL, where the NFL's got their national TV deals and those are locked in. A lot of these regional deals, they're going to fluctuate. Some of these local cable companies we've seen, they're not going to last forever. So that's a little bit dicey.
No, and the Astros don't have a great deal locally. You're right. That part of it's bad news for the Astros. Text message. Okay, this is interesting. Good luck getting the players to quit spitting. Okay, what happens when a player comes up to home plate and he spits 3 feet away from the catcher? Seth, is that the equivalent of them's fighting words? If Cody Bellinger steps in the box and then just spits out of habit right in front of Martin Maldonado, is it okay for Martin Maldonado to slug Cody Bellinger in the face?
It's a really good point. I think for one, these guys might be playing wearing masks, so it kind of becomes a moot point. Go ahead and spit if you want, but you're just going to be spitting on yourself. So you brought this up earlier. It would have seemed ridiculous. Even a few weeks ago when we knew that everything was drastically changing, the thought of guys competing while wearing masks sounded kind of dumb. Now I don't know. You know, I'm looking at this old streetcar from Philadelphia in 1918 with a sign that says spit spreads death. You know, that was in the middle of all of that going on, obviously, the 1918 pandemic. Yeah you're going to have to ban spitting in baseball. Guys are going to have to be super, super careful about it. The sunflower seeds, the tobacco, all of that, you're going to have to make huge modifications.
$36, cheaper than two beers and two hot dogs, LOL. That's a really good point.
That's excellent point.
I mean, we are operating in an ecosystem where everything is inflated by about 500% anyway. So
you can have every – you know what? That could be one of the deals they come up with is like the players. Okay, if you want to play today, you have to pay for your COVID test, and then they hand over $36 cash. But then you're exchanging money. So you use Apple Pay to pay your $36. You get tested, and then you get to go play and get paid.
Apple Pay, a big winner in all this, Apple Pay. I can't believe I'm saying this for the first time in my life. Actual money, disgusting. It actually is kind of disgusting anyways, but I've been willing to ignore it because I haven't had enough of it that I would like to have. But actual currency these days, no.
Well, even to touch the actual keypad, because I have my debit card attached to my Apple Pay, so I still have to type in the keypad. If I switch that to a credit card, do I not even have to type in my PIN?
You may have to type in your zip code. I have no idea. Mine's on my debit card. Mine's on my debit card as well. That's why I just hand sanitizer right after that.
Yeah.
Prevention. All right. We head into the 9 o'clock hour.
I enter the pin with my elbow.
With your elbow?
Yeah. It's a painstaking process, but people behind me are patient as far as I know.
The NFL is planning for a virtual draft, just like your fantasy football league. Which fantasy football guy will Bill O'Brien be? We will explain next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.